Hello, everybody. Okay, so everybody's here or okay? Yeah.
I think so.
So today I want to bring up something about ADHD and problem brevity, or ADHD from the problem brevity. The main question I'm going to be focusing on is what exactly is ADHD from a quantum gravity point of view. And I've already given this to the company, so some people there, you know, read some familiar slides, but it might be useful to go again. Next slide. Yeah, and when I say there's a paper out, which has been, which is available on the net, the number of slides. ADHD has a very, very long history, and there's a very vast literature on the subject. However, I want to focus here on one particular aspect of it, which is now the meaning of ADHD and its relationship with background indifference and brevity. And if you start to ask such questions, there's not so many. The literature reduces drastically, and in fact, I've highlighted here a few key papers that were key, that are key for the story I'm going to tell. There's a paper by Wicken, which contains the original formulation of ADHD. There's a famous paper by Sanderi, also called the Holographic Ornamentation Group, where in some for the very gravitational way to understand it, for example, at the classical level. There's an influential paper by De Boer and Zerlinde on the meaning of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation there. And then there's somewhere in some paper of Mandelsema at the end, almost in an appendix on the paper of non-Gaussian infeasibility, it's interesting Schrodinger picture which is sketched there. So, what I'm going to say about ADHD is I can't claim total originality on that because a lot of the portion of what I'm going to say, you can find that part of the literature here and there, but I don't think there is anywhere in the literature where people have addressed all series of questions I'm going to come up in a consistent manner. And then this way of looking at the problem allow us to propose also a construction formula. Next slide. So, what is the purpose of this? So the original motivation for me, why am I looking at ADHD? So recently there was a paper by Witten on 3D quantum gravity where he proposed the CFT that would be some equivalent or some definition as the put it. Of 3D quantum gravity. On the other hand, you know, I think this paper sometimes emphasized that maybe, you know, solving quantum gravity means finding the corresponding CFT, and we don't have to worry about the bot can have somehow the CFT, the definition of 3D quantum gravity. However, you know, we have an independent rule, you know, at least lots of us express in physics that we have a fully consistent independent definition of what 3D quantum gravity is, which exists, you know, independently whether there is a cosmological constant or not, or whether the space-time is admits a synthetic end or not. So a periodic definition is independent of any definition, and that's a great opportunity because it will us to look at the two sides, the bulk side and the quantum gravity side and the CFT side, and then ask the question where can we prove or disprove the proposal of Witten, you know, comparing what we know about to first quantum gravity and what we know about CFT. So, you know, that was the central question. Can I, you know, I'm supposed to be a specialist in 3D gravity, knowledgeable there, what should I do to prove that this proposal is right or to prove that this proposal is wrong? So this led to many other questions which are in fact independent of the first one. So the first one is that, okay, is there a formulation of ADHD that allows us to are probably there a way to formulate this conjecture that is, provable in principle? What it really means is when you want to understand exactly what is the supposed exact dictionary between quantum gravity and conformality theory. Another question that arises there is that is the correspondence expected, is this correspondence between one theory of quantum gravity and one theory and one conformality theory, which sometimes looks like it's formulated that way, or is it something more subtle, like a correspondence between one theory of quantum gravity, which has many solutions, and then the solutions correspond to many different theories? So is it a one-to-one correspondence, or is it a one-to-many correspondence? Now, if it's a one-to-many correspondence, how can you even talk about the EFT associated or dual to quantum gravity? That's a problem that might arise or that will arise, as we will see. Now, another thing which was key for me, which I think has not really been addressed in the literature, so we often stated that NDS-EFT is a background-independent formulation of quantum gravity, but it always refers to some type of classical metric and classical background with fixed asymptotic end, and that's not exactly what you would get in a background-independent formulation of gravity. So one key question, in fact, it's the key to the resolution. That's the nice thing about it. One key question is that when there a background-independent formulation of this correspondence. The next thing that do we care for an interesting to quantum gravity? What I mean by that is that is AGSFT a property of string theory and particular solutions of string theory, or is it something more genuinely intrinsic to quantum gravity? I mentioned that some people say that AGSFT can be a definition of quantum gravity. If it's so, then it means that maybe you should be able to reconstruct the box from the CFT, but how do you do that? Is it really possible? Can you propose the reconstruction formula? What is the equation behind this reconstruction? So essentially the purpose of this talk is to give answers to all these questions, or at least to address them. And then also foster discussions and questions. And you might have some other questions about AGS-EFT that I haven't put there, as you can propose them now. I would be happy. But these were the list of questions that I wanted to answer about AGS-EFT. Okay?
Around this advice, I just have a small comment, which is kind of on the side, but around the bottom part of this correspondence. This correspondence was used very, very early on to claim that the energy in asymptotically ADS space time in R space time dimension was non-zero. And this has, several of us, like me and I, and several other people, have shown that this is not the case. Mm-hmm. And so our community has actually provided input into constructing a better dictionary than was available just by looking at the correspondence and taking the public policy theory completely seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I agree. In fact, I haven't mentioned that. I think it's an important point here. This is an interesting field also because there is a lot of cross-fertilization there. There are certain key questions that we have, like background independence or the problem you mentioned, which have not been really addressed, from other point of view. And having this questioning, having these techniques bring new results, as I hope I will convince you or I will convince people working in ADS-EFT for a long time. But, and the same thing on the other side, that if certain statements that they make, are important for us. So I agree with that. It's an interesting field for that because there's a lot of combined expertise or combined questioning that we can confront. My original point was this confrontation to I agree. I won't talk about this energy problem and discussion, but you can can bring it back at some point. Okay, next slide. So before going to the quantum case, let me look at the classical basis of ADS university and a bit about the classical geometry. So suppose we look at D plus 1. So D will be always the dimension of the boundary of the space-time, and the space-time will always be D plus 1 dimensional. So let's look at the D plus 1 dimensional space-time M, which is a dot matrix G, which is solutions of Einstein equation with a cosmological constant lambda. I read the next equation on the diagram of the cosmological
constant.
In my talk, I will mostly talk about the ADS case, which corresponds to the time that we have the equation with the Fischer lambda. And I will always refer to this case, but you have to keep in mind that most of what I've been saying is also true in the second case. And we can have a discussion about that. I might turn down, how the people were meant to do the second case. Okay, so if I look at the space line like that, which is the solution of Einstein equation with the cosmological constant, if you assume that M is conformally compact, then if you assume that the defining function, which is zero on the boundary of M, so in the formula I say rho minus 1 is equal to 0, it should say rho is 0 on the boundary, so the inverse image of 0 is the boundary, that's what this equation says. And then the derivative of all different from zero in the boundary. Then you can define a conformally, conformal matrix, which is G bar, which is rho squared times G, where G is the physical matrix, such that this conformal matrix extends smoothly to the boundary of X. That's what it means to have a conformal compact situation in this case. Then, what's interesting is that the Einstein equation implies that the vector d mu rho, which is the vector somehow normal to the slice at infinity, this conformal metric, is plus 1 in the ADS case and minus 1 in the digital case. So it means that in ADS, the vector is a space-like vector, as the corresponding slice is a time-like slice. Now in the vertical case, the vector is a time-like vector and the slice is a space-like. Okay, so now what you can show that not only this property that the norm of this vector is one on the boundary, but you can always choose such a defining function rho such that this is true in the neighborhood of infinity, of the boundary of M. And one example is just to take the rho of x to be the distance with respect to this conformal metric of a point with respect to its boundary. And with respect to this defining function, the metric has a form with a noun space. So there is a radial direction, which is the rho square over rho square. And then there's a metric on the slice rho equal constant, which is gamma rho over rho squared. It's sometimes useful to go from rho to the physical distance r, where the metric takes the other form. Next slide. And I'm happy to take questions if it's not clear, because it's not the usual subject. So,
the question, what is the SR? What is the metric of the completed space term or the original space term?
The metric d squared is the metric of the original space time. It's the physical metric. It's the physical metric. Because it grows up at rho equal to zero. So rho equal to zero is really at the space. And which is the case. Go to the next slide, So I put back this physical metric. As you, as you see, rho minus 2 gamma rho is the metric induced on the surface sigma rho. So sigma rho is the surface at constant rho, the fine-like surface. Radius, you have to think about it as being some type of fine-like cylinder. As I said, sigma rho is like in this case, finite and radius, and infinity is really when rho is equal to zero. So infinity is a conformal cylinder. Yeah. Now, one of the key properties of such a type of geometry is a classical error, which is, in fact, we can explain lots of the properly about ABS here. The if you look at the eccentric curvature angle of such a space, and have you seen, you know, such a space, or KIJ, then what happens is that if you go to infinity, and if you look around what happens here, the rho equal to zero, then the eccentric curvature density just becomes proportional to the identity that is up to turn the following rule. The eccentric curvature density is just the identity density. And why is this important? Writing the eccentric curvature density with index right up and down, if you put the two index down, then the eccentric curvature density is just proportional to the time of the up to all the rule as well. And this is, you know, one of the reasons of, that leads to a heuristic rhythm for the ABS-CFT rest, and the rest of the talk is to make it heuristic, a very unwavy argument, more rigorous and more fresh. But it actually supposed that for some reason, the physics of the system you're looking at is described by some type of wave function that depends on this gamma rho. The gamma rho is the measure of the whole square. And then let's look at the radial motion. So dr is the radial motion to radial motion. So the cylinder is a cylinder, which is so each slice of labeled by rho or by r is a cylinder. And let me move this cylinder towards infinity. So you look at what is the derivative acting on phi d, well, you can expand it by the chain rule as a functional derivative on the derivative of the metric. Now the derivative of the metric is essentially the eccentric curvature tensor. But when I go towards infinity, the eccentric curvature is just proportional to the metric itself. And the operator I get is this integral of gamma delta phi over delta gamma. And this operator is a little bit, it's just the conformal Riskin operator. Right? The operator of conformal Riskin just counts the number of power of the metric derivative, the number of times you raise your limits. And this is really the global conformal Riskin. Now, so what it means is that due to the cosmological constant, and I need L here, the radial evolution is equivalent near infinity to conformal Riskin. And that's one of the key information. Then, of course, infinity is always left in bounds by radial evolution. This is the endpoint of radial evolution. So when you reach infinity, that the physics should be essentially conformal in bounds. It should be the environment from the radial motion becomes conformal in bounds. Okay, and that's somehow the basic basis for this correspondence that the physics should be described near infinity in a conformal environment. Okay, next slide. So with the original formulation, mainly due to Witten of the ABS-CFT, so ABS-CFT is an equivalence between, on one side, a quantum gravity partition function with fixed Dirichlet boundary conditions and the generating function of connected correlation function of conformal Riskin theory. So let me try to explain that. So namely, let's suppose that you have a set of fields that are living in the bulk, that are big phi, I, which could be a scalar field, And then, nothing like engineering news, but more HD news, a kind of excitation around the human nature. And then some other things, which are bug fees. Now, on the bug side, what we want to compute is, so we first choose an asymptotic ADS spacetime. And then we look at all the possible fees leading on this ADS spacetime, which are encoding in an action for the bug fee. And then we want to compute the gas integral over all, field fluctuations, but with the restriction that this field on the boundary, sigma rho, is fixed to a value with small psi I. Okay, so that gives us a functional which depends on sigma. Sigma is any time like, surface you like, given by rho, and then it depends functionally on this psi I. You think about this subject, in fact, and of course you want to go towards rho equal to zero. So if you think about this construction in flat space, if you do the same construction in flat space, then conformality will be null. But if you look at sigma rho, which is a bit away from flat space, you can slice it by some space-like surface. Then what this object would be is, as shown by Fadeev and Slab not a long time ago, is exactly the S matrix functional. That is, it's a functional of the field you put at asymptotic infinity, which is such that when you take derivative of this field, it produces S matrix elements. So one name I propose for this object is the ADS matrix functional, because it's the natural generalization of what you mean by the S matrix function. So I hope this side is clear. On the CFT side, to reach boundary phi phi I, I'm associated conformal operator of dimension delta I. So each phi phi I, carries some counter charge like Lorentz indices, in your scalar field, one four field, the red, etc. And it's also characterized by the wave transform when I replicate the metric. That is when I replicate the metric this way by, let's say, by rho minus 2, the field is escaping in a way controlled by this conformal dimension. And then the equivalence is, given such an object, you can compute the generating, and given that these operators are in a CFT, you can compute the generating functional of correlated function, which is the expectation value of exponential integral of phi I or I, okay, which is the CFT of phi I. Now, the question is that ADS CFT is a statement that given a theory of gravity, there exists a CFT such that we have the equality that psi of phi, evaluated as rho equal to zero, is equal to the partition function of a CFT of phi I. And that's the original correction. So I hope all the elements here are clear. If you might have questions, but let's go to the next slide.
But if I have the sitter, then this car has two disconnected components, triplex and prime minus. So you said that your concentration should be managed for both. So what do you, when you say boundary in the DS context, what do you mean?
So at this stage, because this is the linear formulation, it's really strictly ADS. But when we go to a background independent formulation, the typical case with the observatory. So at this stage, because this is the it's really on the ADS. People have tried to copy a bit of the formulation by adding now two boundaries, but they will stick to the ADS case for this original formulation.
Okay, so
this is the original formulation, and psi of phi is equal to CFT of phi. But the problem is that when I first look at that, my very early first reaction, because of the illicit argument I gave you, was that, it's kind of obvious, because I unnecessarily have conformal, symmetry at the end. But my second reaction is that it's necessarily wrong, right? But let me put it that way, that if you look at this formulation, there are three puzzles that arise when you look at this formulation. And the understanding, the formulation, the understanding of the three puzzles are the key to the understanding of the question. So what are these three puzzles that this formulation has? The first one is, and this is a puzzle that has been recognized a long time ago, since the beginning almost. It's the fact that, well, this cosmos, if you look at it, the left-hand side is evaluating asymptotic infinity in a given space-time. But you can clearly see quite rapidly that even at the classical level, such an evaluation which really leads to divergences. And these divergences need to be regularized. But you would say, okay, that's a technical problem. Okay, next slide. The second puzzle for me was a very serious one. I never really discussed before. The second puzzle is background independence. So if you look at the equivalence and the way I have formulated it, this equivalence refers explicitly to a background space-time. This background space-time needs to be in a DS space and needs to have an asymptotic infinity. And it also refers explicitly to a slicing of the background space-time because of this sigma rho, and rho kind of coordinate there. However, as we know very well, in quantum gravity, the metric is dynamical, and information about the body geometry cannot be encoded into some choice of background metric, but it is really encoded into this choice of this functional, this ADS matrix, you know, the way we would get this ADS matrix to work out for this boundary space. We put some spin network on the boundary, and then we compute the antiphones, and we try to extract physics from there. So, the reality, the way we think about it, the metric is not there, it's just encoded into this choice of size. Now, if I have size, I don't have a background metric with the asymptotic infinity, so the formulation is like that. That's the second problem. The third problem is, next slide. The third problem is the most serious one. Because this is supposed to be an equation between two objects that does have a functional dependence on the same data, the field on the boundary, that I could find high. So then you can start to look at what are the equations that the left hand side and the right hand side do satisfy. And they don't satisfy the same equation. The left-hand side receives and defines some type of real limit equation, which is a second-order differential equation. The right-hand side satisfies an equation, which is an equation defining the conformality theory, which is a conformal wildline entity, and which is first-order. So how can we have equivalence between solutions of different equations of motion, and even more than that, the equivalence between the solution of a first order system with a second order of differential system. And hello? Yes?
Yeah, this is Lee. Would you agree with putting it the following way? The original conjecture or observation of Wigner is a conjecture about a quantum field theory on a fixed background which is asymptotically ADS. And there we can discuss whether there's evidence of that conjecture, and I think many people would say there's strong evidence for some precise form of that conjecture. But what you're really doing is something different. What you're really doing is asking, is there a related property of quantum theories of gravity where there is no fixed metric that has been required for this formulation? Is there some property of background independent quantum gravity which is related to or analogous to? Because your puzzle 3 doesn't arise for Wooten's formulation, because for Wooten's formulation the quantum field theory on the background satisfies some sort of Schrodinger equation. I think it's really because you're positing, you're trying beyond Whitman now to say that you face these problems. And I think that's really the context of the way in which you might present it.
I would be a bit stronger than that. So concerning background independence, I would say that if your claim is that your theory that describes quantum gravity, then you have to show background independence. And you cannot have a formulation of a theory which is describing bulk quantum gravity without somehow having a formulation which is totally background independent, in the sense that I'm saying here, which is not referring to a classical space-time. I think that you're not going to avoid that. I agree that the correspondence, and if you talk about the correspondence and you don't worry about quantum gravity, it's fine. If you start to worry about quantum gravity, you have to worry about background independence. And the third remark applies even if you assume that there is a background space time, you don't worry about the dynamics of gravity, or you worry about it as a graviton field, you will still have this problem, even in the original formulation. So I think it's already a problem of the original formulation, or a puzzle about the original formulation. It's not very acute there because people don't really worry too much about quantum gravity, or don't worry about this question. So but it was recognized in some convoluted way, or if you put in the next slide, in some sense I said that these puzzles have already somehow germs or have already led to revolution in the literature. This is called holographic renormalization. But I think I would stick to the first thing. You can't give things to me with quantum gravity without having a fixed background, because you don't know exactly whether you fundamental degrees of freedom, and so you have to face these questions. And in fact, these questions are clarifying for the question, I think. Does that answer?
The rest is philosophy. Go ahead.
Yes, but we have this discussion many times, since we have a workshop and so on. At that point, we've been not so strict or original versions of modern men are written differently, but look at it slightly more generally. And then we say that what you have is boundary conditions. And it is certainly true that we can look at a texture of the theory. I mean, say, Steve Shankar, for example, agrees that it's a tiny texture of the theory. We can look at a tiny texture of the theory in which some boundary conditions are satisfied. And these boundary conditions that can put at infinity, and in the internal space time, you allow the metric to be dynamical, no fixed background metric, or anything like that. And then you are looking at this particle, the partition function, where you allow also the metric to vary in the inside, subject only to the condition that all the metrics considered are symbolically identical.
So I agree with you. You see, the goal here is not to just have these vague things about identity, as we said before, but a framework where you can say, well, how can I prove it? That is, what is exactly the statement I should? So at the end of the day, you will see that whatever the interpretation you have, you might go back to that and say, what exactly it meant when people were saying that. But at some level, if you go around and ask, okay, I know everything about 3D gravity, what computation should I do to prove it? Well, this initial understanding is not enough, I think, to answer that. So I'm not, as you will see, I'm not really in conflict with what, I don't think I am. I'm just going a bit further away. I'm just saying that if you start to worry about this question, so I know that people say there's many reasons why we should not worry about this question,